As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We have yet another packed podcast of finances, of Jadon Sancho, of previewing a huge match this weekend in the FA Cup against Liverpool, and a few other bits as we go along as well. And we've got a new look lineup for this pod as well. Andy Mitten's here as always, but we've got our mate Critch. Mark Critchley's here.
How we doing?
Yeah, good to have you, mate. Considering there's lots of finances and numbers to go through again, it's your specialist subject.
I don't know how I've got this reputation, but yeah, apparently that's me now, the numbers guy. So it was always like my worst subject in school, apart from food tech, maths. So I don't know quite how I've got here, but still.
Well, I'm not sure we're going to be asking you any questions about that area. So yeah, stop writing articles about it and maybe we'll stop getting you on to talk about it. I'm also delighted to say that we've got the Athletic's Jay Harris with us as well. Hello, Jay.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's your second run out on Talk of the Devils. You've not been here for a while, but it's good to have you back, mate.
No, much appreciated.
And your specialist subject this week is Jadon Sancho, isn't it? You're fresh from a trip over to Germany where he's finally beginning to show what Manchester United paid £73 million for a long, long time ago.
Yeah, like you said, I'm now the Jadon Sancho expert. It was a bit of a happy coincidence that I went over to watch him play. I actually went to Dortmund to interview Sebastian Allaire. So just a quick cheeky plug, keep an eye on that.
Why not?
Wasn't really too sure what to expect from Sancho. It was Werder Bremen were playing Borussia Dortmund. For people that don't know, yes, Dortmund went very close to winning the title last season, but they're currently 20 points behind Bayer Leverkusen. So they've not just inherited a player who's low on confidence, the team is also low on confidence. So I wasn't really too sure how they were going to play. And for the first 30 minutes or so, I don't think Sancho did much right. He certainly tried, and then completely out of the blue, he just scores this pretty special goal where he just, you know, kind of rolls it with his right foot, absolutely breezes past, I think the defender was Malatini, and scores. And to be honest, I think the entire stadium wasn't too sure if he'd scored or not, because it was quite a muted celebration, but it was a really impressive piece of skill.
Yeah, you timed it perfectly, didn't you? That was his first goal for 10 months for Dortmund. He then followed it up on Wednesday night, Andy, by scoring his first ever Champions League knockout phase goal in a 2-0 win over PSV, which has seen them through now, Dortmund, to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and made me feel very jealous that there's another side with a Manchester United player in that stage of the competition and not just exiting at the group stage.
Well, he's not done it for Manchester United, so...
Unfortunately not, no.
No, unfortunately not. I mean, he was bought to do that for Manchester United.
There is that.
But, you know, it's not worked out. I'd love to see him come back to form at some point, come back to Manchester United to be the player we all hoped he would be, but his relationship with Erik ten Hag has clearly broken down, and he'll have his version of the truth. As a journalist, I've heard different things about both sides of it. I've said on this podcast before, when I've interviewed Jadon in the Mix Zone, one of the most polite young men, but I've also heard stories, and Dortmund confirmed stories of, you know, turning up for training late, that type of stuff. So clearly talented. You don't just lose that talent overnight. You don't just exist to perform as a top level player. But he was an underwhelming signing given how much he cost. Dortmund asked for 110 million for him at the start, And we were all saying when United knocked down 20 or 30 million off the asking price, smart business that. It didn't look too smart a year or two later. It's weird, isn't it? An English lad, and I don't think he can speak German. Do you know, Jay?
No, I don't think he's integrated particularly well into German culture. That's actually what one of the supporters I spoke to outside the stadium said. Correct. Compared to some of the other English players.
Yeah, I was told that by, and I spoke to a Dortmund player who said he's a good lad, but if you live in Germany, it's probably a good thing to speak German. And yet he's performing in front of 80,000 people. More people are watching Borussia Dortmund than Manchester United. But you're not getting the same level of media scrutiny. And if he is, well, he's not going to read it anyway because he doesn't speak the language.
Maybe that's why he's not learnt German. That's probably quite a good little protection point, that. Interesting that you say as well about some of the comments that are coming out of Dortmund. I mean, in your piece, Jay, that came just after the weekend trip over to Bremen, you quoted the Dortmund chief executive, Hans-Joachim Watzke, who basically was commenting on Sancho's disciplinary issues, or so-called disciplinary issues. He said there aren't any. The only issue is that he turns up late for training. But what do we go to the stadium for? This is quoting him directly now. We don't go there because everyone is always on time. I care about how he plays with the ball. I don't want to be too mischievous with it, really, but there's a lot of things that come out of Dortmund, and even in Jadon Sancho's interview last night after scoring against PSV, there's a lot of things that sort of challenge the established narrative from Manchester United that there were issues with discipline, that he wasn't performing on the pitch. And even Sancho saying about the support that he gets and being grateful for the belief that Dortmund have in him, it does feel like a challenge at times, some of the stuff.
Watzke's probably being a little bit clever there as well. I think he said that a couple of days after Sancho re-signed. So it wouldn't have been the smartest move from him if he came out and said, yes, we know he's got all these, you know, lateness issues, etc., etc., and we need to crack down on him. So I think there was an element of that to it. But Edin Terzic said after the game that Sancho's been very disappointed with how he's performed recently. And so Terzic and Sancho had like a conversation at the training ground last week. And I thought that was quite interesting. I don't know if you guys have seen the video when Sancho re-signed at Dortmund and he starts asking about where's Marco Reus? Those two have a really, really tight-knit relationship.
Yeah.
And I think it was quite poignant that Sancho on his first game back actually assists Marco Reus and they go over to each other and hug straight away. So he's clearly got, I'm sure that did exist in the Manchester United dressing room, but he's clearly got a senior figure who he really looks up to and kind of looks after him. It was also quite interesting that Sebastian Kehl, Borussia Dortmund sporting director, came into the mix zone after the game. I certainly don't think I've ever seen that a Premier League side do that before. Maybe it's a little different in Germany. But again, he kind of spoke about Sancho and just said, you know, he's working hard every week. He's, you know, getting better and better and better. So certainly the noises coming out of Dortmund is that they're all very, very supportive of him. And Sancho himself said after that first game back that I feel like I'm back at home. So it's clearly an environment for him that works. And as one Dortmund supporter I spoke to before the game said, sometimes a club's just right for a player. And as Andy touched upon, maybe it's because the media glare is not that intense. Yes, he's just scored two, you know, crucial goals for Dortmund in the last two games, but he hadn't scored in the eight games before that. And he wasn't looking great in those games before that. It's interesting how quickly the narrative can change, but can you imagine if he'd gone eight games without scoring for Manchester United, we'd be having a completely different conversation.
Yeah, and we have done over time as well, to be fair, considering the way that Jadon's form had gone at United. I mean, Critch, in a way, I thought we'd be talking about him quicker than this. It's only taken 6 weeks, but like Jay mentioned, eight games without scoring and barely even made a ripple over here, really, did it, in England?
Yeah, that's right. And look, with Sancho, it's always been a question of environment, I think. And there was always these ideas and all these questions around whether he was a stylistic fit, whether the Bundesliga just like suited him better, and whether he was really suited to the Premier League or to the way that United play. I think what you've seen over the last few weeks is the fact it's not just as simple as him going back to the Bundesliga and ripping it up, right? He's been a player out of form for quite a while. He's lacked that rhythm, perhaps that lacked that confidence. As we've discussed, there's probably some fault of his own in that. But again, like, he's not the first big name Manchester United signing to come and underwhelm. So there's kind of blame on both sides there. So I think what you've seen is just a player finding his form, finding his rhythm again, getting back into it. And look, I think we all kind of know that his abilities and his talents, his record at Dortmund, the level of output that he was putting on there before he joined United was up there with the best in Europe, right? And made him one of the best young talents in Europe. That's why we were all so excited about him coming to Old Trafford. So there's still that potential there, but it's just, look, it's difficult to say that he's going to fulfil it from a United perspective, because we've just spent the past 2 or 3 years not seeing it. So there'll be more proof in the pudding further down the line, you think?
Yeah, there will. And he's got more time to prove what he can do between now and the end of the season, of course, as well. I mean, Jay, was there any indication whatsoever when you were over there about Dortmund's interest or ability to keep him beyond the end of this campaign?
I think all of the supporters were pretty united in the fact that it was just going to be a six-month fling, for want of a better word. And they were talking about Dortmund.
Going back to an ex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they basically said that Dortmund don't really get that much out of the situation. They're basically almost rehabilitating a player. He'll go back to Manchester United and it will either work at Old Trafford or he'll move on to a different team. And they were talking about the finances involved. The most expensive signing in Dortmund's history is Ousmane Dembele, and that was, I think, 8 years ago, and he cost around €35 million. And in the last few years, they've been paying around €30 million for players, Daniel Marlon, Sebastian Allaire. So straight away, that's probably not a figure or a fee that Manchester United executives would be happy with.
No.
And that's even before you factor his wages into account. I'm sure they're being supplemented by Manchester United at the moment. And I don't think Dortmund have the capacity within themselves to stretch for the transfer fee and for the wages. So unless there's some sort of compromise on Sancho's behalf and on Manchester United's behalf, I don't think he'll go back to Dortmund long term.
I mean, Andy, the question is, if he does come back to Manchester United, if it is just a fling with Dortmund, how does it go differently? Because it'd been very well established, the situation before he left, and time doesn't necessarily undo all of that straight away, does it?
Dortmund financially are very lucky to have him, and they're going to play a soft power play to try and endear him more to the idea of staying, even though they know that that's improbable. They're going to do everything they can to make him feel this is my home, but he doesn't really decide that. He really could push for it in the medium term, but he signed a contract with Manchester United. Jadon Sancho doing well for Borussia Dortmund can actually help Manchester United, because unlike Anthony Martial at Sevilla, where he did nothing, if he's doing well, if he's performing in the latter stages of the Champions League, then his value is shooting up by the week, because it's showing mentally he's in a good place, physically he's in a good place. We don't know what's going to happen at Man United. What if Manchester United change manager and suddenly the major issue for Erik ten Hag between the two of them is removed and a new manager might come in and go, yep, I've always liked Jadon Sancho, away we go. The outlook would be completely different then. From what I heard about Erik ten Hag with Sancho, I was told he invested a lot into the relationship. He really worked hard with him. He really encouraged him. One of the sources told me that he went over and beyond what any manager could reasonably be prepared to do with any young player who was having a difficult time. And that's why he felt let down. His line has been hard and consistent ever since then. And I think a lot of fans think that having a manager who is strong, because that dressing room has been really difficult for several managers to manage, is not a bad thing, but clearly there's two sides to the story. If Erik ten Hag stays as United manager and that's in play, then the idea of him coming back to Manchester United looks almost impossible. But I remember saying 6 months ago, do you think he'll play for United again? I think me and Carl, I think I certainly said yes.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what? And there's been times where I look completely inaccurate for saying that. But, you know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen with Mason Greenwood? These things have not been decided yet. They just haven't. So we can only speculate off the information that we know.
Okay, we want to hear your opinions, of course, as well on Jadon Sancho. Do you want him back at Manchester United in the summer? You can email us, devilspod@theathletic.com. You can comment on the app as well if you're listening on the Athletic app. Or if you're on Spotify, you can vote now on our Spotify poll either way. So let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you as always. Critch, right, we need to talk about another one of Manchester United's failing wingers. Anthony, you've done a piece on him this week, and I had to reread one of the lines several times, even though I think I already knew it anyway, but just to realise quite how damaging this stat was. He's only registered a goal or assist once this season. One goal, one assist, and they both came against a League Two side. I mean, that in isolation tells the story of his campaign so far, doesn't it, really?
The mid-table League Two side. We're not even talking about the good League Two side here. So, you know, and the one that gave United a game as well, by the way. So, you know.
17 shots, I've mentioned several times.
Yeah, look, Anthony, where do you begin, really? I think from the moment that signing happened, there were question marks over it, over the fee. Whether that was outside the club or it was inside the club as well. I think people were surprised by just how far United went with that. And he's had a lot to prove ever since then. Now, personally speaking, I've always had a lot of sympathy for him and for any player in that position, because they don't get to pick how much clubs pay for them, right?
No, that aspect definitely is tough on a lad.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And so that level of expectation perhaps isn't fair on him. But let's face it, the performances ever since he arrived 18 months ago now just haven't been up to that standard. Haven't been up to a standard for a player worth really half that, but particularly so this season. I think last season, you could argue that Anthony was fulfilling a role. He was doing a tactical job in the team. Even in that piece that we did this week, you could see that this season, he like leads the way in terms of winning possession in the final third among any player in the Premier League. So he's clearly got some abilities and some talents that Erik ten Hag sees in him and put to use. And ten Hag's been a huge advocate of those abilities. But we've seen over the past few weeks and over the past couple of months, really, just how even perhaps his biggest champion at United, Erik ten Hag himself, has lost some of that faith now. And yeah, he's not been starting out the team. That is due to the performances. Erik ten Hag accepts that. Anthony accepts that. And it's difficult really to see a way back in, because even in this period where Rasmus Højlund has been out and we perhaps expected him to force his way back in, you've seen Omari Forsson given his first senior start. You know, other players preferred and brought on as a substitute ahead of him. There was the game against Fulham, obviously, where he came on in the final minute of ninth minute of added on time at left back. I mean, yeah, that's the position that Anthony's in at the minute. And it raises questions about his future. It raises questions about United's planning and spending that we've asked for so many years now anyway. And the fact that you've got two players signed as right wingers in him and Jadon Sancho, at least.
That's the right way to term it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They've spent upwards of, it must be, what, like 160, 170 million pounds. And we're talking about them potentially both leaving this summer. I mean, goes to sum up the state of United's transfer dealings over the last few years.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's detail in your piece as well about the ongoing police investigations into Anthony's relationships, and they are still ongoing, both in Brazil and in the UK, I understand. And that's detailed in the piece too. But Andy, you know, it's on the pitch where he's being judged clearly. Those other allegations are far, far more serious. But as a Manchester United footballer, he's just not contributing enough, even if he is winning the ball back the most of any player in the Premier League.
You see pockets of matches where you can tell that he's doing exactly what the manager asks of him. I think in Forest at the Cup recently. But he's nowhere near the player that Ten Hag or United fans thought he would be. And while it's not on the player how much he cost, when you do cost so much, it's not unreasonable to expect that you're going to be a first teamer and that you might be half decent. Barcelona looked at him, I've said that on this podcast, and ended up going for Rafinha instead, a lot less than the price. So it looks bumbled how he was signed, because the figures shot up, but United got desperate. Now that wouldn't matter if he was playing well, but he's not playing well. I always caught a player a full season if they move into the new league, because it takes time to adapt. I did a big piece on Onana last week, and one thing I didn't mention on the pod was United really tried to get him in early because they knew there's a massive adjustment. And Anthony was done at the end of the summer, where United were desperate. And Ajax, because he'd received so much money from Manchester United, didn't need the money. What were they going to do with it? I still think he'll have time. He is only a season and just over a half into his time at Man United. You've got to learn the language. You've got to integrate. You've got to have good people around you. I mean, this is a kid who grew up in a favela in Brazil. And again, you've got that media scrutiny where Ajax are big. They're known throughout the world, but still nothing like the level of Manchester United. But he will be primarily judged on how he plays for Manchester United. And he's not been playing well. And he's becoming a scapegoat. And that's a big problem for a player. When he came on at the weekend, there was no noise. There was nothing. Really interesting reaction from the crowd. Not booing him, but like just nothing.
It is usually a sign of what people think. It's a very clear sign, isn't it? A final point on this then, Jay. We're talking about Manchester United's right winger, current right winger, who's not playing in Antony. Jadon Sancho, like Critch said before, was bought to play on the right-hand side, but actually he's playing on the left in Germany, isn't he? Is that what has been the case every week? I mean, he certainly has in the last couple of matches. So, you know, if United are going to bring him back, he's not necessarily going to solve the issues that they've got in that right-wing position.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of hoping to say, that... Of course, the whole situation with Ten Hag needs to be resolved. But even if that is resolved, the tactical consideration is still a massive issue. I think what people maybe haven't quite realised is that another reason why Sancho's improving at Dortmund is that he's got a very capable left-back in Ian Maatsen behind him, who's also only there on a short-term loan. Although I think Dortmund do have an option to make that permanent. And what you'll see is Sancho operate on the left. He'll regularly interchange positions with Julian Brandt in the centre. So he's kind of got that freedom to roam around. And he's got a left back behind him who will just bomb on and provide an option on the overlap. You look at both of Sancho's goals against Werder Bremen and against PSV last night. They're both where he's coming off the left and he's cut inside and onto his stronger right foot, and he's, you know, kind of narrowed it into the near corner. He obviously can't do that on the right wing. So Manchester United have to decide, how do we utilise this player in the best way possible? Because obviously we all know that Rashford prefers to play on the left. So if you bring Sancho back into the fold, you've essentially got a £70 million backup left winger or a £70 million backup right winger. And that's probably not a position that you want to be in. So it's tricky to say. He's clearly showing his best form on the left wing, but that's not where Manchester United need him.
No, and Alejandro Garnacho is making the right wing slot his own as well. So he could end up third choice on the right hand side if Ten Hag still pushing Antony. It's a very interesting dynamic, and Jay, it's been brilliant to have you on to tell us about your trip over to Germany. So thank you very much. You can go and read Jay's article on The Athletic right now, of course.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, well, as promised, we're going to talk about finances now, which is why we have Critch here, of course, along with other interesting anecdotes, as we've already found throughout the course of this podcast so far. But Manchester United's numbers, some interesting revelations in the last few days. What do you think the biggest takeaway is from the initial announcements? We'll talk about the SEC filing in a moment, but from the initial announcement, what was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, look, I think when we came on the podcast last time, I said, don't worry about all these revenues up, commercials, stuff like that, because these are just quarterly results, right? So it's only one part of the full picture of the whole season, and we'll learn more as we go on. When these come out, what I'm looking for at the minute is, how does this affect United in terms of the big thing that everyone's talking about, FFP and PSR?
Yeah.
And I think when I came on, I don't know, a couple of months ago, it was not great news, right? They'd lost something like 32. They were pre-tax loss of £32.8 million for the season. Now, that has now, in the second quarter, been revised down to 5.6. Basically, That's good news. That is good news for PSR, because it means that when you top that all up over 3 years, like we explained last time, that means that United have got about, I don't know, what is it, like 27 million extra room now than they did when we last spoke. So that is more room, a better FFP position, a better PSR position. These results that came out on Tuesday went up until the end of December. So they give us that actual picture of the position United were in when they were going into the January transfer window. And so it's interesting because we heard a lot during the January transfer window about how FFP was tight and how we were going to have to be, you know, couldn't really do a lot of spending. Look, I think that may very well may still be the case. But the numbers that came out on Tuesday suggested that it's a more positive outlook than we suggested a few months ago.
Yeah, and I think it also tells a picture of how important the Champions League is to Manchester United as well, when you consider that second quarter, which covers the group stage, that United were in the competition. Broadcasting revenue was up 59%, matchday income was up 81%, which sort of underlines, you know, how much financially better off United are in the competition, despite the fact, of course, that the wages were much higher for that. We've then had another revelation, which has come in the form of a filing to the US Securities and Exchange Commission, which is fast becoming a very important dynamic of following Manchester United's fortunes. And that revealed that United had paid off £120 million worth of debt on their revolving credit facility in February. That's basically the company credit card that we've referred to a few times on the podcast. Maybe that's a bit concerning, maybe a little bit depressing, when you consider that it also revealed Sir Jim Ratcliffe had pumped in $200 million as agreed as part of his investment in Manchester United, $156 million in English money. It's very easy to just think that the $120 million came from that, isn't it, Critch? And actually, his investment has just gone on paying off debt.
In a way, that's right. It has. United didn't have a lot of cash lying around in the bank before Ratcliffe put that money in. That money has got in, $200 million of it. And what they've decided to do is to pay off a chunk of the debt. Essentially, like you say, they've got debts on a credit card that they're probably having to pay quite a lot of interest on. They've got some cash lying around and they thought, what's the best thing we could do with this cash right now? It's pay off this debt so we're not paying out for that interest. Look, I think when that announcement of Ratcliffe's money was made, it was all about how this is intended for Old Trafford. But if you remember, there was a SEC filing over the Christmas period that I had to sit around on the 27th of December and read through. And that mentioned that, yes, that money's for Old Trafford, but it can be used for other purposes in the meantime. By paying this debt off, United will be saving money on interest. It might allow them to take out another loan for the Old Trafford project that would be on lower interest rates, that would be cheaper. It gives them more room. It gives them more leeway, essentially. And one thing that you hear, whether you talk to United, whether you talk to people who are close to Ratcliffe, is that, yes, this £300 million might be spent on other things in the meantime, but ultimately, this extra £300 million will have to go towards Old Trafford. And in a way, you could say that by paying off the debt to maybe potentially take on more debt or whatever in the future to help pay for Old Trafford, this is serving that purpose.
Andy, how concerned are you about this? I mean, Dan Sheldon's got a piece on The Athletic that's just been released this morning, on Thursday morning, which gives more details about this SEC filing. But overall, to see the reality of that money going to pay debt doesn't make fantastic reading, does it?
Critch is your businessman, eh? He's your man for your numbers. I mean, top journalist, top lad, terrible choice of deodorant. why is the FTSE so high at the moment, Critch?
The FTSE?
Yeah.
I think it's just been a good year.
I need detail, mate. You're right for The Athletic. Can't just think it's a good year.
Look, like,
what's going to happen with interest rates? What's going to happen with the euro?
Look, I think the safe bet is everything's going to get worse, Andy. That's what I've learned so far in this job. So.
In life, you mean, just financial markets.
Were you good at maths at school, Critch?
Like I said, it was probably my weakest subject behind food tech. And in food tech, I actually once made a tuna and sweet corn pasta bake without putting tuna and sweet corn in. So that's about how bad I was at food tech. So, yeah.
But you're clearly a man of merit and talent. What else do? Heard you got a stall on Chorley Market.
What?
Or did that go when you started following Chorley FC, glory hunting, when the crowds rose above 400?
Yeah, well, you know, like, if you're going to, I had to jump on the Gary Flitcroft bandwagon.
Are you a glory hunter, Critch?
I am a glory hunter, yeah, because, you know, when Gary Flitcroft comes and manages your football club, that's the best thing to happen to it in years. I think that perfectly sums up just about where your football club is. So, yeah, jumped on the bandwagon late with that one.
Andy, let's get back to your football team. How concerned are you about all this?
I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe's involvement in Manchester United is a positive. I've said it for a year.
What about the reality, though, of this first financial filing since his money's been in the club, that it looks like it's gone out of one column and going straight onto that debt column?
Yeah, it does. Look, I've been on the record many times about what I think of the Glazers taking money out. The fact that Jim Ratcliffe's putting money in rather than taking it out sets him apart from what the Glazers have been like. Is debt good for business? Well, it used to be a dirty word, but I speak to a very successful businessman and they said, tell me it's completely normal. But there was no debt when the Glazers got involved, and it is touched on a billion at times, which is concerning. And the way that the Glazers have operated it, I'm not a fan of that at all. Success comes from success on the football pitch. And I think that's the one big change Sir Jim Ratcliffe has made. So 2 years ago, you had people internally at staff meetings going, OK, we may be sixth in the league and just got battered, but, you know, the financials are great. And I've just spoke to some fans in the US and they're not too concerned, you know, they're not even bothered. I'm like, no, this is all wrong. And if that's flipped, Manchester United should become more successful. And the revenue growth from merchandise sponsorship that other clubs like City are really experiencing now in a boom. We don't know how much of it is legit or not, but I can see it with my own eyes. I see Manchester City shirts on sale in America, in South America, in India, in North Africa, and that's just in the last few months. The Champions League clearly is very important for Manchester United in terms of revenues. Yes, the wages rise substantially, but United still benefit from that. Another thing about last year is the number of home games. You know, we're not getting them home draws this year. So that's going to be reflected further down in the figures. 18 in the first 4 months of last year. 8, 9 in the first 4 months of this year. That's a major drop off. So there's always variables here, and the club are always going to put the most positive spin on it. It's up to journalists like Critch, financial expert, to dig into it deeper. And Dan's piece, I've just retweeted that, because I ain't got a clue about SEC filings. I know you live for them, Ian.
Well, I have to now, because we have to talk about it on the podcast. There are many, many, many topics that I never thought I would have to have such a big interest in.
What did you get in your GCSE maths, Ian?
An A.
What did you get in your A-level maths, Ian?
I didn't do A-level maths. I did AS-level maths. I got a B in the
what
end.
What did you get in your other A-levels, Ian?
4 A's.
Hey, look at him smiling.
That's pedigree.
Proud as punch.
That's pedigree. I haven't even got a B at GCSE.
Well, if you need some help with these SEC filings, Critch, you know where I am, and this won't be the last time we talk about them, unfortunately. You can read more, like Andy and Critch have mentioned, on The Athletic. Mark's piece is on there, and so's Dan's. Go and have a look.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're asking you to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24.
Three lucky entries will win £100 or $100 worth of Amazon vouchers. So whether you're a long-time listener or a new one, we want to get your feedback. Go to theathletic.com/survey24. That's theathletic.com/survey24. SURVEY24. The link is also in our episode description.
Okay, Liverpool, let's talk about football that relates directly to Manchester United again. Simplest way to put this, Andy, how big is this game for Erik ten Hag and his future at Manchester United, do you think?
Huge, huge, huge. It's the only chance United have got of winning a trophy this year, but also stop Liverpool winning a potential quadruple, but that's just a side issue. Two biggest teams in England, 9,200 Scousers come in. These are the moments that we live for. So that's me being optimistic and looking forward to it. The reality is Liverpool, what, 17, 18 points ahead of United in the league? Clearly a better team. Somehow United got a draw at Anfield. United's record in the FA Cup against Liverpool is excellent. It's win, 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 win. You know, going back, I went back as just 1922. So I'm encouraged by that.
1922 was the last time Liverpool beat United in the FA Cup.
No, I need to double check. My uncle scored in 48 in one of them at Old Trafford. These are just games at Old Trafford.
What was the atmosphere like, Andy? You must have been brilliant to be there for that.
Well, actually, because Old Trafford had been bombed in the war, the game was played at Goodison Park in front of 70,000 people. Yeah. But I stood on the Gladys end, mate. Yeah, I was a young lad, 8 and 9, 1948.
In your short shorts, lot of long shorts, with your rattle.
With me rattle. So the record's good. No one expected United to get the draw in December at Anfield. Nobody expected United to beat Liverpool at home last season when Jadon Sancho put the team ahead.
Yeah.
That was a turning point. This is massive for Erik ten Hag. You know, go out of the FA Cup and the season peters out into a sixth or seventh, and I fear for his job. I think he probably would lose his job.
Yeah.
But win the FA Cup by knocking out Liverpool puts a totally different slant on things. And if he can show that players are coming back, this is what we can do with my full team, then I think he's got a convincing argument.
Yeah.
Massive for Liverpool as well. But nah, just bring it on. Bring the scout. 9,200 of them. Fantastic.
And hopefully it's a unique atmosphere at Old Trafford for this game. I mean, you mentioned the Sancho goal. That's United's only win against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool since 2018 in the Premier League. They did beat them in the FA Cup fourth round in 2021. Like you mentioned, Andy, the FA Cup record against them is very good. Looking at the performance last weekend, Liverpool played tonight, of course, against Sparta Prague in the Europa League. But, Critch, looking at their performance last weekend against Manchester City with a pretty makeshift back four, it shows what a strong home support can do, because they certainly gave Manchester City, a pretty full strength Manchester City, a run for the money.
Yeah, 100%. And look, Liverpool are getting back to full strength. Now you saw Salah come on in the second half of that game. Those players that they've been missing are starting to come back. But this is the first time that United have played Liverpool at Old Trafford since that game right at the start of Erik ten Hag's era, hasn't it? It's like 18 months now. Yeah. So it's been quite a while. And look, if I think back to that game and after the two defeats at the start of the season going into it, I think there was as much trepidation and as much anxiety as there is now. But that night, whether it was ten Hag, whether it was because it was the start of a new era, whether it was, but the players and the fans and everything, even though you had the protests outside before as well, everything just felt geared up. Everyone felt really up for it. And I think, you know, look, if you look at ten Hag's record against Liverpool, it's 1-1, drawn 1, lost 1. Now, the loss was, the defeat was pretty bad, right? 7-0 at Anfield.
Yeah.
What? They lost 7-0?
Do you remember? I don't know if, did you?
No.
Was the Men in Black, no, Mind White thing. Yeah, I think we all had to go through that. So that record, I mean, look, three games, it's evenly split. And I think that speaks to like how the teams approach each other. You know, United, I think, this season have played nowhere near as well as Liverpool, but in quite a similarly fast, direct style, looking to try and counter-attack. It's a game that can end up and go either way, I think. And there's kind of the result often ends up at extremes, if you like. So you had the 7-0, but then you had United, that victory, played fairly well. I wouldn't say they beat Liverpool comfortably that night, but they more than gave them a game. So I think, look, if Old Trafford's energised in the same way that it was then, that night, then absolutely there's a chance of pulling off a result. And I'm not as pessimistic as, say, I would have been 2 weeks ago going to the Etihad, for example. I think, you know, there's more reasons for optimism this time.
Do you share that, Andy?
Yeah. Are you at the game as on the telly, or are you going as a fan?
Fan.
I'm on the telly this week, so I'm going to sit in your seat and pretend I'm you, because the camera's going to come into me.
Give us a wave.
I'll be the new background. Remember the game during COVID at Old Trafford against Liverpool in the FA Cup?
Yeah.
It was a cracking game of football, that. 3-2. I was on the telly for that one as well. Spoke to James Milner after it. Didn't want to know me at all. And then I just said, by the way, I'm writing Patrice Evra's book, and he said you're the hardest player he ever come up against in the Premier League. And this, I helped him get over the defeat to the mighty Manchester United. He went, he really said that? I said, absolutely. When it comes out next year, go to any good bookseller and buy a copy of it.
Still available now.
Liverpool were actually very gracious in terms of how they lost that game, and don't always say that of him. But yeah, I think Critch is right. It can spark out of nothing, as it did last season. You know, there were protests going on outside the ground. Old Trafford was shut for the start of that match because the protests were that sustained, and the mood is very different now. But Liverpool are still favourites because they're so good. So Eric worked it really well at Anfield, but that was maybe to get a draw. Now, a draw's not going to be good enough on Sunday, is it? There has to be a result.
Yeah, there's extra time and penalties. There will be a result one way or another, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So his approach is going to have to be different. I sort of say Liverpool are 60-40 in favour of winning, but they don't win at Old Trafford in the FA Cup. And touching on the fans is the right thing to do. Got to proper get behind them.
Yeah.
Properly get behind them. I'm sick of Old Trafford being average. I'm sick of going to massive games, derby games around the world in where the atmosphere is miles, miles better. I was at one in Tunisia a few weeks ago, and some fella said, how is it in your little bourgeoisie Premier League now where all the fans sit comfortably? And I thought, you cheeky so-and-so. But he had a point, in my opinion. United fans have got to properly get behind the side. I said the same before Bayern Munich, didn't I? And I think United fans didn't. And you've got to do it. It's Liverpool at home, because they're going to be right behind theirs. They are having a wonderful season. I've spoke to some of them. They're loving every minute, adding the emotion of Jurgen Klopp's trademarked farewell tour. Imagine them winning at Old Trafford. It's just going to be absolutely horrendous. You can do your bit by getting behind them, urge them on, Anthony Hattrick, way, bring on the next team.
Critch, that is a point really, isn't it? We've obviously got the home game in the Premier League against Liverpool to come, but United's rivalry with Jurgen Klopp is coming to an end. Will you be glad to see the back of him?
I think everybody will be, look, let's face it, because...
Apart from Liverpool fans, yeah.
Apart from Liverpool fans, because he's been the figure, if you like, that United have been looking for to fill the Ferguson void, right? He's been a guy who's come in, he's built a connection with not just the fans, but the city itself, with the club. He matches that aura and that, you know, intensity that the supporters want from their team to see on the pitch. The style of play is exactly what they've always asked for. Fast attacking play. You know, there's a lot of, perhaps not the podcast to say it on, but there's a lot of similarities between Liverpool and United fans in that respect.
From the demands of the crowd, it's almost exactly the same, I would
exactly.
say.
Exactly.
So many similarities across the board.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And, you know...
It's a very working class support, the core of it at Anfield, like it is at Old Trafford, you know, a northern working class support, which the values of giving your all, hard work, we've talked about in relation to a number of players in recent times, but like you say, exciting, attacking, having a go at people, strong tackles, even the sort of pressing element as well, which is maybe a more sort of bougie way of talking up some of the principles that I've just been talking about, but there's definitely a similarity. In fact, in some ways, Klopp would have been the Klopp would have been the ideal manager for United, I suppose.
Well, there was that story, wasn't there, at the time that he was interviewed with, well, there was a conversation between him and Ed Woodward, and you know, Woodward described Old Trafford as an adult version of Disneyland, and that kind of set Klopp back a little bit. I think he's a manager who's, like I say, he's tapped into the aura of the club and the fans, and that is what I think, you know, some United managers since Ferguson have tried to do as well. I think of Ollie particularly, who you know, represented a lot of that. But you also need the results, and he's had those as well, and they've been hugely successful. So, yeah, I think that it's nobody, no United fan is going to be sorry to see the back of Jurgen Klopp, but the legacy that he's going to leave at Liverpool and the success that he's had there is what I think a lot of United fans would want from whoever is going to be the guy to restore United to the former glories as well.
Yeah, the Disneyland story came out of Rafa Honigstein's book, one of our Athletic colleagues. Also, there's a line from Ferguson where he praised the personality drive and knowledge that Klopp brought to Liverpool and said that was exactly the sort of qualities that Manchester United needed. Do you know how close United actually came to trying to get Klopp, Andy?
In September 14, I met Ed Woodward for an interview for United We Stand, and he was glowing about Jurgen Klopp. Glowing. And that was on the record.
Yeah.
But United had just appointed Louis van Gaal. Timing's been really interesting because had Klopp been available and United were getting rid of van Gaal, I think United would have gone for Klopp. You're right. He has tapped into what their fans want him to tap into. This means more and all that. So similar, the clubs. Whether you're measuring the numbers of supporters in Ireland, Northern Ireland, in Scandinavia, in Australia, they're huge. In my opinion, the biggest Premier League clubs by a mile. And I back that up with numbers as well. In terms of the trophies that they've won, the proximity of the cities, the rivalry which transcends football, the music, the economic rivalry, which Critch will talk about in great detail. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And I've got good mates who are proper Liverpool fans, and they give it to me and I give it to him back. And I like the fact that that rivalry exists. I'm not into the tragedy chanting. I'd be really disappointed if he had that at Old Trafford at the weekend from either side. Just got no time for it. And before the game, the last game at Old Trafford, I did a piece for The Athletic where I spoke to Stephen, who'd lost his brother at Hillsborough. He's like, me and my brother love George Best. We really respected Man United. We came to Old Trafford all the time. And they're like, yeah, your fans were also singing about Munich at the time. I went, yeah, it's disgraceful. It's disgusting. I'd be disappointed if he heard that. And I wouldn't be disappointed if Manchester United go through against Liverpool. It's what we all want. But, you know, this cliche form goes out the form book. Remember the 99 game? United were top of the league. Liverpool were ahead until the 89th minute. Then Cole and York combined, and a lad called Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got a last-minute winner. United won 2-1. That had happened again that season. These are just some of the best moments supporting your club. I'd be destroyed if Liverpool destroy Manchester United. That 5-0 under Ole was horrific. But just the fact that we're covering so many areas around the game is great. This is what we love. Only it doesn't happen all the time.
Final point about the players on the pitch, Critch. We don't know about Rasmus Højlund yet. There was an expectation at one point that he'd be fit to play in this game, but obviously we saw pictures of training earlier on this week on Tuesday, and Højlund wasn't part of it. Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Mason Mount were. In fact, I spoke to Mason Mount later that day, and he was absolutely buzzing to be back and couldn't wait to get back out there. So I'm guessing he's going to make himself available for this game. There's also a weird story about Lisandro Martinez as well, which is on The Athletic, that he will join up with the Argentina squad during this international break, despite the fact he's still injured and he's targeting a return for Brentford after the international break, which just seems like a really weird situation. But whichever way you look at it, over the next couple of weeks, this United team's going to be stronger again, hopefully, if they don't get more injuries again.
Yeah, well, I think we said that like a couple of months ago, didn't we? There was all talking about how Ten Hag said that once he gets all the players back, we're going to see this team winning. And to be fair, we did for a very short period
briefly,
of time, didn't we? And we weren't always totally convinced by the performances either, but they were winning and can't argue with him, can't fault him on that. But the thing was, I think in terms of him actually playing his best 11, that maybe happened for one or two games right up until Martinez got that injury against West Ham. So injury is a bit of a consistent factor all season. And to be honest, almost hoping and wishing for this time when everything's going to be right and everything's going to be plain sailing, it's probably a mistake on our part, to be honest, because you're always going to have these issues cropping up in the squad. But United can feel that they've been hit pretty hard compared to a lot of other clubs, maybe not Liverpool, but compared to a lot of other clubs in the Premier League this season. Martinez is a weird one, but apparently this also happened back in September when he was recovering from the injury that he had at the back end of last season. He went away with Argentina as well. And I think it speaks to just how, probably how highly he's thought of in the Argentina setup and how much of an inspiration and a leader he is among that group as well. So, yeah, there's always going to be injuries cropping up every now and again. So, like I say, I don't think we can just hope that everything's going to suddenly come perfect. But it's good to see that players are slowly making their way back. Yeah,
slowly being the word in some cases, definitely. Right, we're going to leave it there then on Talk of the Devils. I hope you've enjoyed that. Another meandering tour of Manchester United consciousness from Critch and from Andy and from our guest Jay as well early on in the pod. We hope you enjoyed that. And we'll speak to you after Liverpool, whatever happens. Take care. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Athletic.